Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. This week we're going to be in Plymouth, Massachusetts. That's right, where Plymouth Rock is and where the Pilgrims landed nearly 400 years ago. In fact, in 2020, in just 2 years, they'll be recognizing and observing and celebrating the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrims landing in the New World for Religious Freedom. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about our organization, log on to our website at ohioca.org. Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit here, this program, and also in weeks to come, we'll have Pastor Paul Jaley, who heads up the Plymouth Rock Foundation in Plymouth, Massachusetts. In fact, his congregation will be conducting reenactments of the Pilgrims and their assembly and their prayer and church services. It's really something quite to see. My wife and I and a group is going up this year. Those of you that are in the Boston area, you might want to join us. That's coming this Thursday, Friday, Saturday. To learn more about the events around the celebration for this year in 2018, log on to their website, and that's the Plymouth Rock Foundation, or just go to plymouthrock.org. And we'll be there this week, and we'll be telling you more about that, but we're very excited about it. Of course, we'll be going to Plymouth Rock, taking in the observances there, and then we'll be going to Boston to walk Freedom Trail again and actually take a tour of the historic Boston or Massachusetts State House, where our American Revolution was started in the city of Boston. Well, there is a special election coming up here in Ohio on August 7th. That's right. The 12th Congressional District is having a special election. A voter guide is available on our website. Again, just Google Ohio Christian Alliance or go to ohioca.org and you'll see the voter guide for the 12th Congressional District. This is not a primary. This is actually an election. And whoever wins on Tuesday, August 7th, will be sworn into office. This is taking place due to the fact that the seat was vacated by Congressman Pat Teaberry as he retired from Congress earlier in the year. And because the time in which he retired, it leaves the remainder of his term yet to be filled. So there was a primary earlier this year, but now this is going to be the actual election. There will be, not to confuse you, another election in November for the same seat. But again, this is an important election on August 7th and one in which both the Democrat and Republican entities are putting a lot of time and energy in. We as faith value voters really do need to get out and vote our values. I can tell you that Mr. Boulderson did respond to the Ohio Christian Alliance candidate survey and his responses to important questions that are pertinent to the faith community are on the voter guide. And again, that's at ohioca.org. So if you're in the 12th Congressional District, we want to encourage you to get out and vote on August 7th. So if you've not looked where the map is of the 12th Congressional District, it is on our website as well. And it takes in part of Franklin County, Licking County, Morrow County, in the Zanesville area as well. Also up in, as far north as Richland County. So those of you in the Mansfield area as well. And then of course, Delaware County. But you can see the map of the 12th Congressional District if you have questions about that on our website, again, at ohioca.org. And what we say is go out and vote your values. Well, with me on the phone is a good friend of ours, and he is the Reverend John T. Coates. And together, we had the privilege of attending the White House observance of the National Day of Prayer back in May. And what a wonderful time that was. He is a fellow Ohioan. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is a Columbus native. Reverend John T. Coates has led the Ohio Coalition of Concerned Black Citizens for 18 years. Pastor Coates and an ordained elder in the Church of God in Christ and senior pastor of the Metropolitan Church and president and CEO of Metropolitan Ministries. Pastor Coates serves as the executive secretary of the Ohio West Jurisdiction of the Church of God in Christ. Brother, welcome to the program.
Well, Brother Wells, it's good to be here. It's good to be here, especially in this very critical time in which we live. This is an important time. There's a lot of things that are happening. They're happening fast. And my prayer is that complacency doesn't build up in the minds of Christians in our state, and that we remain alert and vigilant as it relates to helping the progress continue to take place.
Absolutely. I'm going to read the scripture verse that was the theme of the National Day of Prayer. And again, we'll talk a little bit about what that observance was like at the White House this year, and really what the Trump administration has done in its outreach to the faith community. But reading from Psalm 133, the theme verse of the National Day of Prayer: "Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious ointment upon the head that ran down upon the beard, even Aaron's beard, and that went down to the skirts of his garments, as the dew of Hermon, and as the dew that descended upon the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord commanded the blessing, even life forevermore." Behold how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Well, Pastor, you and I have been in unity for some time now. I think it dates back to 2003 when I first was coming to Columbus, and we've been in fellowship ever since. And it was so good to see you at the White House this year. And actually, it was our second time being at the White House. We were there the year before, the first invite of the National Day of Prayer Committee back to the White House for the 8 years under Mr. Obama. Unfortunately, there was not an official observance at the White House, but there was in the first 2 years of the Trump administration. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. And, Donald Trump brought the National Day of Prayer back. It was a beautiful May morning in the Rose Garden of the White House, and there was an assembly of Christian generals and just people that love Christ that had been invited to the White House on that day. It was an exciting historical moment. It was a historical moment that prayer would emanate from our nation's executive house. I call it a national house. That prayer would begin from where the leader lives, and then would emanate throughout the country, reverberate, and that in and of itself was exciting. There was worship that took place, there was scripture reading that took place, and yes, we prayed.
Absolutely, and there were clergymen from all over the country and from Judean Christian heritage that were there in observance of the National Day of Prayer. There's a wonderful spirit of unity that day. And the president signed an executive order. He signed an executive order that would launch a faith-based and community initiatives office right from the White House. Now, during President Bush's term, he signed an order about the faith-based and community initiatives directive. And it is a way in which the partnership of public funds supporting faith entities back in the communities all across the country that are doing wonderful work of feeding the poor, clothing the naked, visiting those in prison and those sick, and being mentors to young people and after-school programs and all of that, and even those who are involved in opiate addiction recovery. But it's kind of floundered over the years. The Obama administration did some things with it, but the Trump administration is really ramping up their game. Not only have they appointed directors of faith-based and community initiatives, representatives in the various agencies like the Department of HUD, the Department of Justice, the Small Business Administration, and then even the White House, he's putting an office right out of the White House. And this order basically states that houses of faith, faith-based organizations should not be prevented, but have equal opportunity to apply for the same federal grants for the programs that they're running out of their houses of faith that are reaching the people of their communities. Your thoughts, Pastor?
Absolutely. These ministries, and sometimes they're not even large churches, they're small churches who are on the front lines and dealing with the various issues that ail our nation, be it if it's drug addiction, alcoholism, be it if it's infant mortality, whatever it is. The president sent a very clear message to these religious-based organizations, to the church, saying that we need you. We're not going to reject you. We're going to call for you to get back engaged, because unfortunately, what the Obama administration did is that they took what Bush had started and said, okay, church, we don't want you doing these things anymore. We're going to make it difficult for you to apply for these dollars to serve the community, because you proselytize, because you minister as well, because you propagate. So we're going to cut you out of the process. The Trump administration comes back in and says, no, we need you, because you're men and women of faith, and what you're doing in a community, sometimes without any money, you're having great impact, and we're going to embrace you. So I believe that is just important as it relates to the administration of our tax dollars, but I think is also important spiritually, is that you have the government or the king not rejecting the work of the prophet.
Amen. That's right. And, you know, back here in Ohio, how this works, obviously we have an opiate addiction crisis in the state of Ohio, as many communities do across the country. But in Ohio, we've had our unfair share of tragedy with the opiate addiction crisis. So there are a number of groups that are working to help addicts for drug prevention and education programs and reaching out in their communities. But when some of these faith groups have gone, and they're doing tremendous work, they're actually having a high percentage rate, Pastor, of recovery of the individuals they're reaching out to, and they're having tremendous success. But when they go to make application on the county level for some of the funds that they need for education, for tools, for resources, they're basically being told, you can't apply. You know, your faith is basically preventing you from coming and applying for these funds. The president said, oh, no, that's not the case. That's not the intent. In fact, Congress put together what's called the Cures Grant. The Cures Grant is basically lots of money that are going back to the states for opiate addiction recovery and education purposes across the country. In Ohio, through the Ohio Department of Health, has made these applications for these monies. Then it goes down to the counties, and that's where the problems begin, Pastor, because when a pastor or a faith organization, nonprofit, goes to the county agency and they're starting to apply, they're told, well, you know, that you're going to be prevented because you're sectarian in nature, you're proselytizing. That is not the case. They're not to be prevented. They're to be treated as anybody else coming in the door to apply for these grants. And that's what the president basically was saying in his executive order. Your thoughts?
That's why the work that you do is so important as it relates to advocacy in government that represents our value system. There was an Irish Democrat who made a statement once that all politics is local. Well, unfortunately, a lot of the administration of government funding is local
as
well.
So, that's right.
So there's decisions that's made on the federal level. Those dollars are then delivered down to states, to county governments, to city governments, in the form of block grants and other grantees. And those governments may be of a different mindset than the legal instructions that they've received from the federal government. So our advocacy and our ability to organize and to pay attention to what's actually happening on the local level has an impact, because we still have to fight for those dollars that are rightfully that we are entitled to compete for, and that's not happening, and that's why your work is important. The church still needs to organize on the local level and advocate for local change to take place. There's an interesting phenomenon that has been occurring in these metropolitan areas and urban areas is that you've had a hostile takeover nonprofit style that has been occurring
right.
in many of our cities throughout the country. So you have large organizations that are swallowing up or running the smaller nonprofits out of business. So the smaller nonprofits, no matter how effective what they're doing, those a dollar is a dollar. So the larger organizations, in the day of decreased funding, and you know the same dollars aren't necessarily available today that may have been available 10 years ago, those larger organizations don't want to compete for those dollars. So what they do is they get their friends together and they run those smaller nonprofits out of business so that they can claim those same dollars. So we have to realize what's taking place and then organize in order to advocate and to assure that these local governments are in compliance with what the federal government is now making available to religious organizations that do the hard frontline work throughout our community.
That's right. And the frustration is that people realize that sometimes people in government agencies and the bureaucracies, more and more dollars get poured in, but it really just doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't really have the desired effect that the legislator, the congressman up in Congress makes that vote and he's thinking or she's thinking we're making a difference back home. But then by the time it transcends through the federal agency, through the state agency and the county agency, it's just lost in the shuffle. And so here's a faith-based group. Sometimes it's a storefront, and they're on the front line, Pastor, and this is what you have said so well. They're actually pressing the flesh, doing the work with these people day in and day out. Those the guy that got out of prison, he needs a place to stay. He wants to not go back to the old gang, but he wants to be employed and he wants to get on with his life, or she wants to get on with his life. And it's that storefront ministry that is giving them the hope, the encouragement. Those folks need some resources. Resources are available, but the county agency sees them as a competitor. So what they'll do is they'll say, well, you'll need to file this complicated grant. And of course, obviously, you do need a grant writer. There's no doubt about that. To make application, but they'll make it so difficult. There are larger organizations, they have professional grant writers. All they do is make sure they check all the boxes, as it were, and make sure that they are scripting in type and writ exactly what the federal agency or the state agency wants. They become the recipients of that grant. Is it going to really have its desired effect at the end of the day? No. Unfortunately not.
No, and what happens is that when they in the process of making it more difficult for these smaller Christian organizations, religious organizations to get the money, they labor them down with a bureaucracy. And you know, Chris Long, I think we're being nice in almost making government seem inanimate, talking about local government and county government, and you know, these are people that are making decisions
yes.
in government.
Yes.
These are county commissioners and their staffs. These are mayors of cities and their staff. These are city council people and the folks that they hire that are in place blocking the way and making a systemic decision. They get in the room and decide, no, we're going to block these groups so that we can give the groups of our choice the money to do the work.
Well, that's right. There shouldn't be these prejudices at these agencies, but the reality is they exist. And we're talking about not so much a racial agency, but people in the faith community, both in the black and the white church, working together in tandem. They go make application. It's because of their faith they're being discriminated against, because they are a faith group that's working in partnership and not reaching out in the community. But that entity in the bureaucracy, they look at it and they're saying, well, we're not going to give it to them. They, you know, it's like can't go for religious purposes. The president's saying that people, houses of faith, should not be prevented, but have equal standing and application for these grants. Well, you know, the Declaration of Independence has been written in regard to this, and let freedom ring. But, you know, the message hasn't gotten down to the local level yet, Pastor. That's why we have to advocate for these folks and remind them of the president's executive order. Your thoughts.
We have to advocate. And I also ask myself the question, what are these local governments afraid of? Why are they afraid
of
religious organizations getting engaged? Are they afraid of our effectiveness?
Uh-huh.
Are they afraid of the power, not just of the social work that we can provide with compassion, but is it that they're afraid of the power of prayer that goes along with that? I keep asking myself, why are they afraid? And even if we mobilize Christians in our local communities to pray for these funds to release, that is still action. But then we will show you and what organizations like yours do is that they will show you the logistics of how to advocate for the right thing to take place. How to advocate to make sure that your values are being adhered to. How to advocate to make sure that the federal laws are being adhered to.
Well, that's exactly right. And we're going to let folks know. That's why if you're listening to this program today, you're getting some information about President Trump's executive order on faith-based community initiatives and how that is to transcend down into the state and county levels, the local level, in making application for grant programs. Those of you in the working with human trafficking, fighting that, working on opiate addiction recovery programs, you make application. And, you know, you can call our office. We're not, you know, a legal group, but we will steer you in the right direction and give you the information you need. If you need that, also visit our website at ohioca.org. That's the Ohio Christian Alliance. We actually have the president's executive order proclamation that he wrote at the Rose Garden at the National Day of Prayer this year, and we just got to make it continue it because I believe, like you said, Pastor, the results are going to be that faith-based groups actually have the difference. They actually can do more with less, and they can actually show up their counterparts in the government bureaucracy of actually having an impact and effectiveness back in their communities. That's what we really want to see.
Faith-based groups are experienced in this type of work because before there was government grant dollars available, it was the church.
Amen.
It was faith-based organizations that established educational institutions. It was faith-based organizations that took care of widows and children who had no parents. It was faith-based organizations that fed the hungry and clothed the naked. We're experienced in this type of work. And I believe that when the government turns to the faith-based community and gives us the opportunity that we should have to help the community, that the message, the spiritual message that it sends is that the government is not rejecting God, but yet is embracing God.
And we need to continue to pray for our president and those who serve us in public office. Pastor, we're out of time. So glad that you were able to join us. How can people reach out to you?
Likewise. Post Office Box 745, Reynoldsburg, Ohio, 43068, and Pastor John Coates on Facebook.
Thank you, Pastor. God bless you. We'll have you back real soon. Thanks for being my guest today. That's Pastor John Coates. Again, he is president of the International Ministers Alliance of Columbus and Vicinity, and he does so many good things, and his voice is an important voice in our state and nationally. We're so glad that you joined us today. If you missed any of our program, log on to our website at ohioca.org. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
This is Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance, with an election announcement. On Tuesday, August 7th, a special election is being held for the 12th Congressional District. This election is taking place due to the fact that the seat was vacated earlier this year. The Ohio Christian Alliance has produced an educational voter guide. Vote your values and vote August 7th in the 12th Congressional Special Election. To view and print the voter guide, log on to our website at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Well, this has been a busy week here in Ohio at the Ohio State House and also in Washington, D.C. as news is really breaking left and right. For those of you that are a listener to this program, you know that we supported the Ohio Pastor Protection Act, House Bill 36, and we're urging calls to the Ohio legislature in support of this. Good news, it passed committee yesterday, and today it passed on the Ohio House floor. It's now on to the Ohio Senate, and this was a bill that was stuck in committee for over a year. Dozens of pastors, clergy from across the state came in and testified in support of this legislation that protects religious freedom for pastors and churches, and we're glad and thankful that it is making its move through the Ohio legislature. More about that on our website. Also, breaking news, Justice Kennedy has announced his retirement from the U.S. Supreme Court. That means in the coming months, President Trump will be nominating another member to the U.S. Supreme Court. And of course, lots of breaking news all over at this time. We're going to be focusing on a promise that President Trump made to the Midwest and to Ohio and to West Virginia and to Pennsylvania, and that was to the coal miners. When he ran for office, he said that coal was going to make a comeback, and we're going to do for our coal miners. We're not going to leave them behind. 8 years of the war on coal has reaped devastation in these communities that actually kept the lights on for over a century all over America. And we were leaving them behind. And on the front end of that war was Mr. Bob Murray. And let us give them a proper introduction, because we're going to kick off our roundtable discussion and a continuation of how the coal industry is doing in the Trump era. With me on the phone is Chairman and CEO of Murray Energy, Mr. Bob Murray. Also joining us is Jim Martin, Chairman of the 60 Plus Association, and Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Chris.
Well, thank you, Mr. Murray and Jim and Congressman. We're so glad that you've taken time to be with us. We know that, Congressman, you're in and out of votes as we speak on the floor. Thank you for joining us. Do you have a little time with us, Congressman?
It'll be spotty. It depends on what time they call votes. We're expecting votes here within the next 10 minutes or so, but I'll be with you as long as I can.
Okay, let's get right to a media clip with Mr. Murray on a recent broadcast.
The New York Times headline was false, a very poor headline. The article itself was not bad. I do want to correct what Tyler just said. I have never blasted the Trump administration or even criticized them. Indeed, I think he's done a wonderful job to assure low-cost electricity in America and to shore up the reliability of the electric power grid. Today, Angela Merkel announced that Germany is no longer going to close any more coal-fired plants. They need them. You have a power blackout right now in Las Vegas. It is true that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission failed to enact the immediate reforms necessary to ensure the reliability, resilience, and the security of the grid, but they were directed to do so by Secretary Perry, and that is the Trump administration. He has been very supportive of coal. A lot of it was low-hanging fruit in overturning these regulations, Contessa, because many of the Obama regulations were illegal, so they were very easy to overturn by executive order.
The New York Times got its hands on a letter that you had sent to the administration with sort of a wish list, a to-do list that would be important for the coal industry. And when you're looking through that, rolling back regulations, that got done. Overhauling who sits on the FERC commission, on the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that got done. Four of those commissioners were Trump appointees. Unanimously, this commission voted against what would effectively subsidize coal and nuclear power. How does that sit with you?
That does not sit with me well. You see, windmills and solar panels are subsidized by the taxpayer, 30% production tax credit, and electricity from a windmill and a solar panel costs 26 cents a kilowatt hour. My coal-fired electricity costs 4 cents a kilowatt hour, and America needs it. There is bias among the two Democrats, Glick and LaFleur, on the FERC. They are obviously never going to support coal or nuclear power. The other two employees against, the chairman himself, McIntyre, and particularly Rob Paulsen, are wrong in their decision, and it needs to be overturned.
Well, you know, Mr. Murray, I thought you did a great job on that, by the way. Of course, it's a hostile environment with liberal media, but I thought it was great that you called out those people that are sitting on the federal FERC, because you see a lot of politics that's being played out in some of these agencies that have been obstructing the Trump administration's attempt to move forward with a solid energy policy going forward. Your thoughts, sir?
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Chris, is feckless. Absolutely feckless. It's more of the swamp that we've had in Washington, D.C. They fail to recognize that you cannot store sunshine, you cannot store wind, and you can't store natural gas at a power plant, but you can store coal and nuclear power. And let me tell you what they have done to America. We only had one cold snap this past winter in Ohio, December 27th to January 8th. And this will be very important to your listeners because their electric power supply is in jeopardy and they're paying a lot more for their electricity than they need to. So that is what Secretary Perry, with President Trump behind him, directed the FERC to address. They failed to do so. What happened during that cold snap between December 27th, January 8th? 2 million Americans in the PJM interconnection and in New York lost their electric power. 22 people died in these 12 days. That's the one cold snap we had. So the United States Department of Energy, National Energy Technology Laboratory, they call it, investigated the matter. What happened? Coal that had been supplying 29,000 megawatts a day during this period of time went to 46,000, supplied 89% of the electricity.
Yes.
nuclear power supplied a small improvement. Windmills, the winds were up to 50 miles an hour. They provided zero electricity. The solar panels, it was cloudy, zero electricity. Natural gas said, well, we have 37,000 megawatts in reserve. They had zero because the gas pipelines to the power plants froze up and the gas could not be supplied. Plus, home heating took the precedence of what gas was available, so there was none available for these power plants. But coal stepped up with nuclear power and provided 89% of the power.
That's right.
In spite of that, the price of gas, what little gas there was, went from $3 a 1,000 cubic feet to $95 and over $175 in New York City. Electric power prices went to $500 a kilowatt hour during those 12 days. It normally costs $28 a kilowatt hour.
Right. And it was coal and nuke that carried the load during that cold snap. Now, Congressman Johnson, this hasn't gone without notice among your colleagues in Washington, has it?
No, it hasn't, Chris. We've had a number of hearings on energy and commerce. I've met personally with Secretary Perry, and you've already heard Mr. Murray talk about the support that that the Secretary is giving and that the President are giving. I'm right there in lockstep. We've encouraged FERC to solve these problems. I've had personal conversations with the chairman of FERC about these issues, and other members have as well, and we will continue to address them. I think Mr. Murray, you know, makes a very valid point, and I've been saying this since 2011, and Bob has heard me say this many, many times. Wind and solar and alternative fuels, they're not going to be able to provide the baseload energy to our electric grid. We must continue to have coal as a part of our energy profile. And I knew back in 2014 that the Europeans were going back to coal-fired energy because they told us that in several countries when we took an energy and commerce trip over there to talk to the folks about energy. And I specifically asked them then because they had a goal, a stated goal to reduce carbon emissions by 40% by 2030. And I said to the European Union energy minister, I said, how can you even think that you can accomplish that if you're going back to coal-fired energy? And now I was setting the stage for the question. I'm glad they're going back to coal-fired energy, but I was asking a question that I already knew the answer to. I said, because our president in the United States says we're going to reduce carbon emissions by only 30%, and in order to get there, he's shutting down the coal industry in our country. How are you guys going to reduce it by 40% by increasing your use of coal? And yet our nation, our president says we've got to shut down coal in order to accomplish that. And he basically looked at me and said, you know, it's lip service. You know, that's our goal. But our ratepayers are no longer willing to pay the exorbitantly high price for electricity. So, no, it is not going unnoticed here, Chris. We are deeply engaged in this conversation.
Well, that's right. There's a lot of interest at the table, obviously. There's, you know, those from renewables, gas, coal, nuke, coming, and all those that represent them coming to the table. But what's actually important is that the Trump administration promised a solid energy policy going forward, not the nonsense that we've had to live under the last 8 years, which was really a war on coal, which was actually crippling the reliability of the grid. Congressman, I know that you were on committees about actually the national security concern about the reliability of the grid. And by the way, the grid is the national grid is pretty much a new phenomenon outside of around 1999, 2000 is when it came online. This group named PJM and all the readings that I've done here. So, Mr. Murray, there was a lot of gamesmanship going on at the beginning of the year. The Trump administration, through Mr. Perry and the Energy Department, were trying to put forward some policy. And then FERC, which is the Federal Regulatory Energy Commission, it's a bureaucratic panel. And basically, they rejected the suggestion. Even when this report that you were quoting came out where coal and nuke over-delivered during the cold snap, where gas underperformed and renewables were almost non-existent, not keeping the lights on in the East Coast. And a lot of that energy is coming out of the Midwest, right here in Ohio and Pennsylvania and West Virginia. Your thoughts, sir?
And that cold snap that I referred to earlier, 12 days, December 27th to January 8th of this year, coal saved $3.5 billion to the electric utility ratepayers in the PJM alone. That was $288 million a day to be there that we saved that couple on fixed incomes. That single mom or that manufacturer of a product who needs a lot of electricity and low-cost electricity to compete in the global marketplace. And this generation that stepped up during this cold snap is scheduled to all be closed.
Well, we're going to get to that in a minute because I want to talk to let Jim Martin come in here because he represents those on a fixed income with a 60-plus association. And, Jim, you've been monitoring this because you're advocating for seniors and those on a fixed income in their retirement years and how this is all going to play out for mom and dad who are basically trying to live out the remainder of their years and live on the income that they raised over their lives. Your thoughts, Jim Martin?
Well, first of all, let me thank Bob Murray and Bill Johnson. They touched upon the situation here with FERC. And by the way, those two Democrats, Glick and Fleur, they never were with us. But thank goodness the president has gone over their head. And Bob, he has done what he said. He promises made, promises kept. He's kept his promise to you. And just in the last 2 weeks, though, despite President Trump's leadership to address the urgency of doing something about coal and nuclear plants, that impact our national security. And that's what it's all about. It is about national security. And Bob Murray, you've been bringing to everybody's attention. But what you're up against is this resist movement out there with these wacky enviros and their friends in the liberal media. And they're trying to discredit the president and you. They're trying to really continue the war on coal. They've now added the nuclear industry. And by the way, you said it best, Bob, when you said it's a bureaucratic cop-out, I think, by FERC. And I've been quoting you in other talk shows, Bob, if you don't mind. I see that, as Bob Murray has said, if it were not for the electricity generated by our nation's coal-fired and nuclear power plants, we would be experiencing massive brownouts and even blackouts in the country. And again, coal. King coal has far outperformed all these other fuel sources. And Bob Murray so aptly puts it, you can't store sunshine. So this is a war going on out there. And yes, I've got so many seniors. 60 plus has got, we represent more voters, more consumers, more users, more beneficiaries than any of these companies and these enviros out there and a bunch of trade associations. With us on this issue, we've got seniors all over the country. They depend on electricity sources that are reliable and affordable.
And affordable.
And again, as Bob pointed out earlier, the price of natural quintupled. It went so far out of sight. It added to the cost of electricity humongously, as Bob has pointed out. This is a war going on here with you. Bill Johnson is your best advocate, Mr. Murray, if you don't know that, here on Capitol Hill. And by the way, I think they're going to move it out of the Energy Committee, maybe into the Senate Armed Services Committee. If they do, guess what? With the illness of John McCain, the chairman now of Armed Services again is none other than Senator Jim Inhofe. And he is a strong advocate for what we all believe in. plus the fact that he is such a strong advocate of Scott Pruitt. And I put out a press release the other day about Scott Pruitt. And the reason the Democrats want Scott Pruitt's head is because he took an action to undo all the tremendous harm done by the radicals in the previous administration. So we've got our work cut out for us.
Well, that's right. And we do have our work cut out for us in keeping the momentum going. Now, Mr. Murray, you said just before Jim weighed in about advocating for the seniors that all of this energy, this generation, is happening right here in the Midwest. And, of course, First Energy, which makes Akron in Northeast Ohio its home and headquarters, they fought the war on coal with you because they, more than any other energy company in the country, was 70% coal generation. They have nuke plants within their line of energy plants, of course, two here in Ohio, one over there, one or two over in Pennsylvania. And yet, First Energy Solutions announced bankruptcy. And so this is actually presenting a challenge and a problem and actually a crisis, because you're talking about two major nuke plants, the ones that kept the lights and the energy going into the eastern seaboard during the cold snap. And then those coal plants along the Ohio River, they're the ones who delivered the energy. Congressman, we got a problem here.
Chris, I hate you. You're right. We do, and I'm that's why I continue to have conversations with the secretary, with the president, and with FERC. And with that, Chris, I hate to cut my time short. They have just called votes. I've got to run over to the House floor. Count me in. I'm still the champion for coal, Mr. Murray. I look forward to seeing you again soon, Jim. Always good to hear from you.
God bless you, Congressman. Thank you.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
This is Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance, with an election announcement. On Tuesday, August 7th, a special election is being held for the 12th Congressional District. This election is taking place due to the fact that the seat was vacated earlier this year. The Ohio Christian Alliance has produced an educational voter guide. Vote your values and vote August 7th in the 12th Congressional Special Election. To view and print the voter guide, log on to our website at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. That was Congressman Bill Johnson joining us this afternoon. He is in and out of floor votes on the House floor in the U.S. Congress. And we're continuing our discussion with Mr. Murray of Murray Energy and Jim Martin of the 60 Plus Association. I'm your host, Chris Long of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Mr. Murray, there's a lot we need to get to here, because we've covered so many areas over the last couple of years and all the challenges that you were facing. Obviously, in the coal industry, one of them was the delivery of the rail the rail lines basically were holding up coal shipments. When you talk about a war on coal, literally, when you talk about supply chain and you're talking about delivery and, an air campaign, you were doing it all. And then here to find out that the rail lines were backloading coal shipments. Has there been an improvement there, sir?
Not a bit. Not a bit. The Congress created the problem with the railroads by giving them monopolies when they broke up Conrail and other railroads. There are only basically five major railroads now in the United States of America. And Congress gave them a region for the country where they have a monopoly. They're poorly managed. They're run by their unions. They're very inefficient. To stay in business in the coal industry, which is vital to the state of Ohio.
Yep.
We have had to export our coal. We'll export 2.5 million tons of coal around the world because they still want our coal. They know it's lower cost by 1/7 of a solar panel, and it's 1/4 the cost of electricity from natural gas, and the gas isn't even available in most regions of the world. But we can't get it out of the country because of the inefficient, the most inefficient thing in America is the federal government. Next to it is a railroad. But they've been given a monopoly. They're supervised, supposedly, by the Surface Transportation Board, which has really become a tool of the railroad themselves. The government has, again, been feckless in overseeing how the railroads are operated. So we have these customers around the world wanting our coal, and we can't get it out of the country because of the terrible railroad service. Half the trucks on these highways, or more than that, wouldn't be there if the railroads were efficient in hauling the products that these trucks do.
Well, that's an issue we're going to have Congressman Johnson back on about. I know he had to run, but I agree with you. They were talking at the Transportation Committee today down there at the Ohio State House of basically computerized trucking. And I'm like, yeah, I want to be next to one of those. I mean, I've already seen those headless Uber driver crashes and things like that. It's ridiculous. And it goes back to, we've got good infrastructure in this country, but it's being mismanaged. I'm going to bank that Mr. Trump is going to make sure that things get done along those lines, and that we're going to see a renovation of our infrastructure, including railways. And God bless you, sir, for all you're doing.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, thank you, and we'll be watching very closely as what Mr. Perry is going to release, and we'll have you back on the program to discuss that. Thanks, Mr. Murray.
Thank you.
God bless. That was Mr. Murray, who is the chairman and CEO of Murray Energy. And, of course, if you missed any of today's program, you can listen to it in its entirety on our website at ohioca.org. Also, if you need an update on the news items of this week, also available on our website at ohioca.org. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.